Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
I love you, baby, and if it's quite alright, I need you, baby, to warm the lonely nights. I love you, baby, trust in me when I say.
Welcome to the Command Zone Podcast.
We went for it on that one.
Yeah, you are listening. And you probably watched.
I'm sorry you're listening.
What about watchers?
No, they can hit mute, I guess.
It's time for Throne of Eldraine. We're talking about the new legendary creatures today. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. If you don't know why we sang that song, that means you haven't seen the trailer for Throne of Eldraine, which you should go watch.
Yeah, it's great. It's fantastic.
It's really sweet. So Throne of Eldraine is fully spoiled, which means we're now allowed to talk about it. And what we're going to do is we're going to break down our normal set we're going to break up our normal set review into two parts. On this episode, we're going to talk about just the new legendary creatures from the set, the cards that can be your commander.
Yeah.
And then we'll do a follow-up episode that's all the new cards from Throne of Eldraine that can go in the 99.
Yep. And that's when we do like the mechanics breakdown and all that stuff too, because there's a lot of spicy stuff happening in the set.
Yeah, but we did this for C19, and we really like being able to go a little bit deeper on all the legendary creatures, talk about, you know, what we think those decks might look like.
Yeah.
So it allows us a little more time to do that. But before we get into it, we are talking about Throne of Eldraine, and you can pre-order it right now at cardkingdom.com/commandzone. If you use that affiliate link when you order your Magic products, singles, anything at all, you really are helping us keep the lights on around here. You're helping us to produce game nights, this podcast, and all of our content.
And a big thank you, as always, to Ultra Pro, who also sponsors the show. Ultra Pro provides the playmats, the Throne of Eldraine playmats, and there are so many new pieces of product that you can get your hands on for this set because the art is amazing. So we recommend that you pick up Ultra Pro products next time you are at your LGS or at cardkingdom.com/commandzone. They also have great dice, sleeves, deck boxes, you name it, they got it.
We get all these emails from Ultra Pro because they're sponsors of the show. And do you know they have like a piece of luggage that's specifically for, we'll put it on screen here, that's specifically for like traveling, carrying your cards and stuff around.
What?
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Cool.
And you know, it's a pain in the butt to go through like airport security and all that stuff.
It
it's a lot easier, I think, if you have like a dedicated piece of luggage that's meant to fit all your cards. So
that's,
I might pick up
sweet.
One of those. Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, wow, we're getting big time, Ultra Pro. And the final way to support all of our content is if you go to patreon.com/commandzone, where you can contribute to us directly and you get all kinds of perks and rewards. You get to watch game nights early. Mm-hmm. You get to talk with Jimmy and I on Discord if you're at certain Patreon reward tiers. Yeah.
Yep.
So also, one of the other perks is we call out one lucky patron every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to
Crispin
Stopforth.
Cool
Crispin
name.
You rock. That is a cool name.
Everyone that
Crispin
is
a cool name.
Is a cool
yeah.
person, by the way.
That's true.
Not just your name. You, too, are cool.
All right, so let's get into it. Throne of Eldraine, new commander review. Throne of Eldraine has more commanders, more legendary creatures than the average set. They said that, which is good. Great for us. Also, there are the Brawl precons, and we've probably at this point already released a couple of our minisodes breaking those down. We will talk about them briefly, but we're going to cover those in separate episodes, so we're not going to go super in-depth there. All right, Let's not waste any time.
That's right.
Let's get into it.
Uncommon legendaries.
Yeah, so there's a cycle of uncommon human knights.
Yes.
Knights is a big sub-theme of Throne of Eldraine because of the Arthurian Camelot
legend
thing. So there's one for each monocolor.
So let's kick things off with Sir Alyn, or Aline, the Lion's Claw. Yeah. 3 white-white for a human knight. It's a 4/4. It has first strike. And whenever Sir Alyn attacks, other creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. This is underwhelming. I would almost expect to see this on just a regular uncommon. But the fact that it's a legendary creature means it could be a commander, but you shouldn't do that.
But I mean, poor white.
Yes.
Just can't get any love. We're going to see one of the colors that doesn't need it is going to get a really awesome one of these. But white, unfortunately, gets left out in the cold again.
Yeah.
A knight's deck with Sir Gwyn probably goes in the 99, but I doubt anyone's building a deck around this.
Yeah, if you're going for like a bunch of knights hit you in the face, then Cathar's Crusade is the kind of card you would put in a deck like this. Sir Alyn, Aline belongs in the 99, most likely not your headmister.
Mistress.
Yeah.
The next one is Sir Kara the Bold. 3 red. Is it Kara or Kara?
Hurrah!
All right, 3 red for a human knight, 3/3. She says, whenever Sir Kara or an instant or sorcery spell you control deals damage to a player, exile the top card of your library. You may play that card this turn, and then you can also tap Sir Kara and deal 1 damage to any target. So
this is spicy.
She's a Tim.
Yeah, she's a Tim that gives you impulsive draw, and it's any time whenever this or an instant or sorcery you control deals damage to a player, you get to exile that top card and you may play that card. So
if you lightning bolt somebody, you kind of get pseudo card draw tacked on. That's very, very powerful.
Yeah, this reminds me of Firestorm and Sunspeaker a little bit.
Yeah, it's card advantage in red. I think this is Wizards pushing in the right direction for red.
Yeah.
Really using that impulsive draw. This is pretty cool. My only, I think, misgiving is that 3 red is a lot. It comes out late.
Yeah, so it feels like an enchantment almost.
To start getting your value going that late is a little bit iffy, but still, I like this card a lot. I think it's pretty cool.
It has the elements of why we like certain legendary creatures, which is has great relevant text, and then the other text in the card allows you to do that text.
Mm-hmm.
So I would actually probably throw this in my Neheb the Eternal deck, because I do have lots of instant sorcery spells that do damage to people. And, you know, if you're able to get extra mana and card draw off it, then there's a good chance you're going to be using a lot of that. A suggestion I saw online is Worth the Raid Mother.
Yep.
Which gives all of your green instants and sorceries conspire. So as you cast a spell, you can tap 2 untapped creatures you control that share a color with it. And when you do, you get to copy it and choose new targets for the copy. And because Sir Kara doesn't say whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, it's just whenever an instant or sorcery deals damage to a player. So Wart's going to let you get double triggers off of that.
Yeah, now Sir Kara would have to go in the Wart deck, obviously, because it's got green. Just any burn spell seems really good. Mana Clash is another cool one. It's a red for a sorcery. You and target opponent each flip a coin. Mana Clash deals 1 damage to each player whose coin comes up tails. And then you repeat this process until both players' coins come up heads on the same flip.
Yeah, so every single time, Mana Clash itself deals damage in separate instances, so you're going to get extra triggers for Sir Kara as well. And that's just a really dumb card, so I don't know. I mean, I would play it, but I don't know if it's great. But it works with Sir Kara really well.
All right, you want to read the next one?
Yep. Next up, Sir Eleonora, the Discerning. Discerning is what Josh and I are quite often on the show, especially when
I'm not always discerning, but when I am,
you'll know.
I'm a human knight that's blue, that's mono blue, yeah.
3 blue for a human knight. It's a */4. Sir Eleonora's power is equal to the number of cards in your hand, and when Sir Eleonora enters the battlefield, draw a card, and spells your opponents cast that target Sir Eleonora cost 2 more to cast. So I don't think this is a commander, but it does seem like a good potentially budget replacement just to have a, you know, a creature that draws you a card.
I guess so. If I've CMC, I mean, you'd just always rather have Moldrifter or something, but
yeah.
I guess if you're going to build a deck around it, you'd want like Blink to draw extra cards and Unblockable, because I think you're hoping at some point that you draw enough cards that she is a huge threat that's going to knock somebody out in 1 or 2 hits.
Yeah. In the Chulain Brawl deck, you could probably put Sir Eleonora in there, and maybe this goes into a rune deck of sorts.
All right, the next one is the green one. It's Sir Farron the Henge Hammer. Green for a human knight. It's a 2/2. Whenever Sir Farron attacks, another target attacking creature gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is Sir Farron's power. Boring.
Yeah, almost as boring as the white one. The only reason that this is potentially interesting is that you do have Sir Gwyn, and you could attach a giant equipment to him, and then you
but
get
Sir
big
Gwyn
attacks.
Doesn't have green in it, so you can't play this card. Yeah, I think you know what green's fine. So this is not as big of a travesty as white, where every time white has a legendary creature, it's an opportunity to help white as a color.
Yeah.
Green doesn't need help, so whatever. They got one throwaway card.
Yeah,
it's not
and
a
these
big
are uncommons too, right? If it was at rare, maybe it adds trample, maybe it adds something more than just +X/+X, and maybe Sir Farron doesn't have to attack.
Okay, but the next one is the big one, and this one feels more like a rare than an uncommon, and it is
Sir Conrad.
I mean, potentially one of the more powerful legendary creatures in the entire set. It's an uncommon. It's also in black, which we know is the winningest color already.
Yeah, we usually list out the cards in our outlines, which you can get if you're a patron of the show, and behind Sir Farron the Henchhammer, we didn't even have a card recommendation.
Yeah,
but
we were just
behind
like boring.
Sir Conrad, it's, we're talking three lines of cards here.
Yeah.
So let's read it. Sir Conrad the Grim, 3BB for a human knight. It's a 5/4. Whenever another creature dies or a creature card is put into a graveyard from anywhere other than the battlefield, or a creature card leaves your graveyard, Sir Conrad deals 1 damage to each opponent. And for 1 in the black, you can have each player put the top card of their library into their graveyard. So whenever another creature dies or a creature card is put into a graveyard anywhere, so basically any time a creature is entering the graveyard, Sir Conrad is going to deal 1 damage to each opponent. Not
they just don't
you.
Want it to occur when Sir Conrad dies.
Yeah, so it's everyone except for him.
Yeah, that's the... Otherwise, they could say whenever a creature is put into a graveyard from anywhere.
However, if you were playing this in Standard and a copy of Sir Conrad was in your graveyard and then you exiled it from your graveyard, then the Conrad on the battlefield would do a damage.
Sure, sure.
But that's not happening in EDH. This is very powerful. There are a lot of conditions that can easily be met here by a lot of different cards.
Yeah, I think this is one of those cards that can easily KO the whole table all at once, combo off. You know, self-mill, obviously, or just mass mill, because a lot of this stuff counts your opponents.
Mm-hmm.
It's when a card creature card leaves your graveyard.
Right.
But it's when any other creature dies or is put into a graveyard, right?
Yeah.
But it's only your... So if you exile your own graveyard that has a bunch of creatures in it, that's going to deal damage to your opponents.
Yeah, I believe it's per instance. So if you like Majuka Bogged yourself, it would get you get one trigger off this, I believe. Not each one.
Whenever a creature card leaves your graveyard. I think it's...
All of them?
I don't know. Judge! I believe it is.
Yeah.
It doesn't say one or more. Usually they would say one or more.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
So I believe you can do some pretty combo-y stuff where you self-mill yourself, deal a bunch of damage to somebody, exile your own graveyard, deal the rest of the damage. Sorry, not to somebody. To each opponent.
Each opponent, yeah.
And that's what makes it really, really powerful.
Yeah. There are a lot of cards in Magic's history that do this, and this is definitely one of those decks that I think certain people will be very attracted to. The people that do like mill in general, this is kind of the guy for you.
So Mindcrank is... a card that immediately comes to mind. It's when it's a 2-mana artifact. Whenever an opponent loses life, that player puts that many cards from the top of his or her library into his or her graveyard. So anytime anybody takes damage, they mill that many, which can make them take more damage.
Because of Sir Conrad, just every
which makes
time
them mill again,
again and again.
Which
yeah.
you could just get it into a chain where just everybody dies. Also, Painter Servant is now a thing, so you can just put that in this deck.
Oh, right.
yeah.
Yeah, Ultra of Dementia is something that you use for yourself. You get a sack creatures, which triggers...
Conrad.
Yeah, and then, of course, more stuff might
happen. It makes people mill. Ultra of Dementia makes people mill when you sack a creature, so then they might take more damage.
Yeah. Or you're milling yourself, so very flexible there. And again, all these artifacts that we've talked about are 2-drops or 1-drops, like Ultra of the Brood. Whenever another permanent enters the battlefield under control, each opponent puts a top card of their library into their graveyard. So now you have 3 chances to get a creature. And then
whenever you play a land, whenever a permanent enters the battlefield.
Yeah.
There's something like Dark Deal, which is 2 in a black for a sorcery. Each player discards all the cards in his or her hand, then draws that many cards -1. So that's just creatures going to graveyards from anywhere.
Yep. Dread Summons, X/X for a sorcery. Each player puts the top X cards of their library into their graveyard. For each creature card put into a graveyard this way, double relevancy, you create a tapped 2/2 black zombie creature token. Which, by the way, Sir Conrad does not say non-token on him.
Right, so if you can sacrifice those zombies, then all of a sudden you're dealing even more damage. Yeah.
It's pretty insane.
Mesmeric Orb is 2 mana for an artifact. Whenever a permanent becomes untapped, that permanent's controller puts the top card of his or her library into his or her graveyard. So you get this out, and every time people are going to cast spells and stuff, just untapping 5 lands, they mill 5. How much damage are they going to take? Is everybody going to take from Sir Conrad? Yeah. And yeah. It's like you said, all these things are low mana costs, so you can get them out, get Sir Conrad out.
And stack them, too.
Yeah.
Imagine if you had two or three of these on the battlefield, and then all of a sudden you're just a trigger fest.
Another card that we think is really pretty cool and broken with Sir Conrad is Necropotence.
Just broken in general, but
yeah, it's already broken, and then you put it in a deck where this can be a kill condition, right?
Yeah.
So it's black, black, black for an enchantment. It says skip your draw step. Whenever you discard a card, this is the important part, exile that card from your graveyard.
Mm.
It doesn't say instead of putting it in your graveyard, right? So you put it into your graveyard, it hits the graveyard, and then you exile it from your graveyard. So for Sir Conrad, if it's a creature card,
yeah,
it'll trigger twice, right? That's a creature hitting the graveyard from anywhere, and mm-hmm. then a creature leaving your graveyard. And Necropotence also says pay one life, exile the top card of your library face down, put that card into your hand at the beginning of your next end step. This is all very important because that's before your discard phase,
mm-hmm.
which means you can be like, Necropotence, what am I at? Draw 39 cards, discard 20 creatures, that's 40 damage to everybody because it's two per creature.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, super, super powerful.
That's crazy. That's crazy because you're putting it into their graveyard and then it leaves your graveyard.
Right. I believe that's how it works.
I think it is.
Yeah.
As a non-rules expert myself, that is 100% how it works. I'm just calling it out now. No one say...
We never have gotten any rules wrong ever, clearly, so how could we possibly be wrong now?
That's actually fascinating. Well, good job, Sir Conrad. You are broken.
Absolutely. And then there's a bunch of cards that allow you to exile graveyards. So once you have gotten to the point where your graveyard is big enough, you can now exile your own graveyard, and then that's a creature card leaving your graveyard, which means Sir Conrad will trigger. So imagine self-milling for 40 or 50, and your graveyard's just stacked, and then you say Bojuka Bog targeting myself, or does Bojuka Bog say opponent? Or Relic of Progenitus is another one.
Yeah, Relic of Progenitus, that's all from all graveyards.
All graveyards, yep. Scavenger Grounds is another card
Tormod's
that does that.
Crypt, a lot of cards do this kind of thing. So
yeah.
Sir Conrad is actually very, very powerful. I expect to see decks made out of this card.
It's possible that it's the most powerful or one of the most powerful legends in the set. We'll talk about a few more that are probably up there, but
pretty crazy.
For an uncommon, pretty nuts.
Yeah, pretty nuts.
All right, let's move on now to we're out of the uncommon night cycle and now we're into the rares and mythics, the new legends. Yeah.
And there is a cycle as well here of monocolored legends.
That all cost three.
Cost three of the mana, sometimes a little more, as was the case of our preview card.
Yeah, I think, is that maybe a sign because Theros is coming back? We know that Devotion might be coming back.
Oh, interesting.
That's what a lot of people are sort of positing that theory out there.
I did not even think about that.
Yeah, I think they're sort of planting the seeds for Devotion to come back. So that's why they have each color gets a, black, 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 white, 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 green, 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 something in there. Okay.
Well, there are some really exciting cards here as well. So let's start with Ayara, first of Lochthwain. Ayara, first of Lochthwain, black, black, black for an elf noble. That's a 2/3.
Is nobles a new thing in this?
It does seem like
it makes me think of Teamfight Tactics.
Yeah.
I want that noble buff.
There are a lot of nobles in this set, and I believe all of these monocolored legendaries with the three in its casting cost are nobles as well.
Noble Tribal coming up soon.
Let's go. Whenever Ayara or another black creature enters the battlefield under your control, each opponent loses one life and you gain one life, and you can tap to sacrifice another black creature to draw a card.
So Mono Black again with another very powerful legendary. I think this is a little maybe below Sir Conrad.
Yeah.
But still awesome. This first card. We're going to talk about this first card a few times.
A few times,
this episode,
and it's a very powerful card. It's also gone up in price because of all the different ways it can be abused. It's Thornbite Staff. It's a weird card. It's a 2-mana tribal artifact, shaman equipment, and it has, equipped creature has to pay 2 and tap. This creature deals 1 damage to any target, and more importantly, whenever a creature dies, untap this creature. And whenever a shaman creature enters the battlefield, you can attach Thornbite Staff to it. So that's why certain cards are very good, because you can play it and then the Thornbite Staff immediately equips to it, because the equip cost is 4. But with a card like Reassembling Skeleton, it's a black creature. Let's say you use Ayara to have... Ayara's got the Thornbite Staff on her. She taps. She sacrifices the Reassembling Skeleton. It goes to the graveyard. Thornbite Staff triggers. She untaps. You draw on the card. You sacrifice another black creature. And now you have a creature you can return to the battlefield for 2 black to keep that process going.
Especially if you're sacrificing the creature for mana to bring it back, like with altars and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The Thornbite doesn't care if she's the one that killed it.
Right.
So you can also tap her for, obviously, you can tap her for ability, but you can sacrifice her for the mana to sort of get into loops like that.
Yeah, the loop is even better because of her sort of aristocratic ability. So
right.
Now if you have, a Reassembling Skeleton pairs great with the Desecrated Tombs of the World that, it's an artifact that says whenever one or more creature cards leave your graveyard, create a 1/1 black bat creature token with flying. By the way, this also kind of works with Sir Conrad.
Yeah.
So again, you're going to get the Reassembling Skeleton is you're just getting into loops where you're either drawing cards, but every single time you're at least draining people of life.
Because Reassembling Skeleton, when you pay that cost and put it back on the battlefield, it left your battlefield. That makes you another token that can then be sacrificed to Ayara to draw a card and deal damage to your opponent. So you can get, yeah.
Yep. There's so many cards that do stuff with cards leaving the graveyard. It's just powerful. And of course, this one is just...
Yeah, I mean, I think any mono deck black or mono black deck will consider running Krik, Son of Yawgmoth. Now it's 4 and then 3 Phyrexian black mana, which means you can pay either 2 life or black mana for each of those. So it's usually 4 colorless mana or generic mana and 6 life. Has lifelink, it's a 2/2 for each black mana in a cost. You may pay 2 life rather than pay that mana. So it turns all black mana on everything on your side into Phyrexian mana. And then whenever you cast a black spell, put a +1/+1 counter on Krik, which is good because of the lifelink. Obviously, this just allows you to cast all your stuff a lot earlier.
And if you're only paying 1 Phyrexian mana, you're actually only paying you're paying 1 less life because Ayara is going to give you, if it's a creature, it's going to drain that life back.
Right.
So that's how you can get these very long combo scenarios where you're just repeating the same thing over and over again, drawing tons of cards. In fact, Sir Conrad, Ayara, and Krik all are on the same deck.
Right. Yep. Another really cool card is Marrow Gnar.
I've never seen this card before. Marrow Gnar. So, thanks.
Marrow Gnar. It's gnawing on your bone marrow. It's 3 black for a legendary creature, Rat Rogue. It's a 2/3. It says rat creatures have fear, which means they can't be blocked except by artifact creatures and or black creatures. That's not important. The important part is you can tap it to sacrifice a rat, and then you create a 1/1 black rat creature token where X is... Sorry, you create X 1/1 rats, where X is the number of rats you control. Remember, Marrow Gnar is a rat itself, so you always create one. Here's the thing. If you get a Thornbite Staff on Marrow Gnar while Ayara is out, you tap Marrow Gnar, create or sacrifice a rat, which untaps it because it has Thornbite Staff on it, creates a rat, then you just immediately go infinite and kill everyone with Ayara's...
Just need some rats.
Yeah, with IRs, each opponent loses 1 life, and you gain 1 life whenever another black creature enters the battlefield. Yeah. So all you need is 1 rat to get it going, and then it's over.
Again, it's important that it's entered the battlefield. It's not cast, which just opens the door in terms of the ways that you can sort of abuse this card.
Yeah.
Shadowborn Apostles, you put this on the list.
Yeah, because black creature entering the battlefield.
Yeah, there's a lot.
And you get into, again, you've seen the loops with like Edgewalker or Thrumming Stone or just... putting somebody in an untenable position with Athreos, where they have to give them back to you and you're casting them for free and you just go, you know.
Let's add on another win condition to that, right?
Now every time I do that, I'm draining all my opponents. And if one of your opponents is at 2 and they can't pay the life for Athreos, then all of a sudden they have to give you the Shadowborn Apostles back. And then you're just like, cast it for free off Edgewalker, sacrifice it, put it in, and it'll just kill everyone. So
yeah.
So I guess the person at 2 will die the second time you do that. And then you have to move on to the next person. But still, it seems good.
Yeah, it seems good. I'm a big fan of this card in terms of just like... power level. I don't know if black needs more help, but I guess it's getting it. I mean, like, play Gravecrawler in this deck.
Well, Gravecrawler and Phyrexian Arena is a classic infinite creatures ETBing thing, because Gravecrawler is 1 black for a 2/1 zombie, and it says when you may cast Gravecrawler from your graveyard as long as you control a zombie. So as long as you have Gravecrawler, a zombie, and a Yara out, you need Phyrexian or Altar. You sack the Gravecrawler for the black mana. It goes to your graveyard.
Recast it.
Drains everybody for 1 because of Yara. Sack it. Recast it. Everyone's dead. That's a classic combo that does a lot of things in a lot of different decks. But Yawgmoth and Nest of Scarabs is the same sort of combo.
Yeah, I love Yawgmoth a lot. 2 black for a legendary creature, human cleric, featured on game nights. It's a 2/4 protection from humans. You can pay 1 life, sacrifice another creature, put a -1/-1 counter on up to 1 target creature, and draw a card. And specifically, there's more text to him, but Nest of Scarabs is an enchantment that says whenever you put 1 or more -1/-1 counters on a creature, create that many 1/1 black insect creature tokens. So you're sacrificing a creature, paying 1 life, but all of a sudden a creature comes into the battlefield, and then Ayara is going to gain you that life back, drain an opponent, each opponent, and you draw a card.
So that's another loop you could kind of get into.
Lots of loops in this deck. It can be very powerful, I think.
Yeah. Plague of Vermin. One more. We'll talk about one more. 6 and a black for a sorcery. Starting with you, each player may pay any amount of life. Repeat this process until no one pays life. Each player creates a 1/1 black rat creature token for each 1 life paid this way.
I'm going to pay 40 life.
Yeah, if you're a little bit above, then you're going to put in that many creatures that are black and just drain everybody. And you're going to get all the life back and deal them that much damage. They absolutely cannot pay any life and get any rats either, because that's just double life and more rats for you. Yeah, that card seems really good in the deck.
Yep, I like it a lot. All right, moving on to this next card. Now, Emry, Lurker of the Lock. Again, we're seeing an extremely powerful card.
Yeah, this is another candidate for most powerful legendary in the set, right?
Yeah, and for a flavor perspective, there aren't that many actual like legendary like figures from the Arthurian tales. You're not going to see the Lady in the Water, but you're going to get Emry.
This is Emry.
Yeah, you're also not going to see like Goldilocks, but you're going to get similar things that are in that world.
Right, Emry is clearly the Lady in the Water holding Excalibur, but yeah, they renamed it. Emry, Lurker of the Lock, is 2 and a blue for a Merfolk Wizard, a 1/2. Says spells cost one, or
this
sorry,
spell.
This spell costs, yes, this spell, Emry, costs one less to cast for each artifact you control. And then, and that can reduce the commander tax.
Mm-hmm.
When Emry enters the battlefield, you put 4 cards from the top of your library into your graveyard. So you mill yourself for 4. And then you can tap Emry and choose target artifact card in your graveyard. You may cast this that card this turn. You still pay its cost, and timing rules still apply.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows you to get back artifacts from your graveyard.
Yeah.
This is Combo-tastic's
town. And it mills yourself each time it enters the battlefield. So it
opens up new artifact possibilities that you can cast, right? Yeah.
So immediately, Genesis Chamber is one of those cards that pops to mind. It's a 2-mana artifact. Whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield, if Genesis Chamber is untapped, that creature's controller creates a 1/1 colorless mirror artifact creature token. So you cast Emry for the first time with this out. You get one artifact on the battlefield. If you have no other artifacts, Emry now costs one less to cast.
Right, because the Genesis Chamber is a artifact as well.
And then you have a Phyrexian... Oh, two less. Sorry, yeah. So then you have a Phyrexian Altar or an Ashnod's Altar. You sacrifice Emry, you get 2 mana back. Now you actually have, you know, that's 3... You're basically going to be able to recast Emry over and over again.
Mill yourself
out. Commander tax is going to always pay for it, and then Genesis Chamber is going to always make it cheaper and cheaper, and then boom, you mill everything in your deck really quickly in a single turn.
Yeah.
Using blue mana.
I think that's one of the things about Emry is the mill part of it is actually the most powerful part because of the way commanders work and the fact that you always have access to recast them. Self-milling yourself, turbo-milling yourself all the way out is pretty easy with a commander like this, especially when it has a cost reduction mechanic tied to it.
Yeah, another great card is Mirrodin Besieged. It's 2 and a blue, similar to the Khans of Tarkir cycle of the, what are those called? The sieges.
Yep.
You get to choose one of two options. Mirrodin is whenever you cast an artifact spell, you create a 1/1 colorless mirror artifact creature token, which is very relevant.
You would think you would do that one, but you're probably going to do the other one.
No, but the fact that you can do both is why this card is great. Phyrexian, if you choose the Phyrexian option, like Craig would, at the beginning of your end step, draw a card, then discard the card. Then if there are 15 or more artifact cards in your graveyard, target opponent loses the game.
So you just get to like, because you're going to have a million artifacts in the stack.
Yeah. I can just see someone playing extra turn spells with this and just one, single turn, like winning on turn 3.
Yeah. Yeah. I milled myself with Emry and then I go, boom, you're dead. Extra turn, boom, you're dead. Extra turn, boom, you're dead. Yeah. As usual, Expropriate is very, very good.
Yeah.
There are 2 cards that kind of go, quote unquote, infinite with Emry's second ability, which is tap, choose an artifact card in your graveyard, and then you may cast that card this turn. So Mirren Spy says it's 2 and a blue for a 1/3 with flying. And it says whenever you cast an artifact spell, you may untap target creature. And then Chakram Retriever, which is from Battle Bond, is 4 and a blue for a 2/4. And it says whenever you cast a spell during your turn, untap target creature. So what you can do is tap Emry, choose an artifact in your graveyard, cast it, and then when you've cast that spell, you untap Emry, and that allows you to tap Emry again. And what you can really do is go nuts with zero cast artifacts.
Yep.
So like Lotus Petal, you'll go infinite on mana, right? Because you cast it for 0, you sack it, you say add a blue, and then
untap Emry.
You untap Emry because you cast the Lotus Petal. So you tap and say, I'm going to recast my Lotus Petal, cast it, untap Emry, sack it. So now you've just got infinite mana with those 3 cards.
You cast infinite number of spells with any of those other cards. Yeah, and you can make infinite tokens. There's so many ways that you can mill someone else out.
And then once you have infinite mana, if you have a sack outlet, you can sack and recast Emry as many times as you want and turbo mill yourself. Lion's Eye Diamond, very expensive, but another card that would work here because you don't care if you're discarding your hand, because you can access the cards in your graveyard with Emry. So that'll go infinite on mana as well. You can also do like Mishra's Bauble, which you can sacrifice to look at the top card of target player's library.
And then draw infinite card. Cards, yeah.
You're going to draw it on the beginning of the next turn's upkeep, but you can just use this as a draw engine.
Right.
Also, you're storming off when you do this, so you can do all the normal storm stuff with Aetherflux Reservoir and stuff, because you're casting Mishra's Bauble or Lotus Petal or whatever over and over again. So that's another way to go nuts.
There's another combo with Intruder Alarm, which is also going to get mentioned a couple of times this episode. It's two in the black for an enchantment. Two in the blue, I'm sorry, for an enchantment. Creatures don't untap during their controller's untap steps. And whenever a creature enters the battlefield, untap all creatures. So that's just another way to get Emry to untap. But then you're pairing it up with, again, like zero-cost cards like Ornithopter. They can recast over and over again.
So there's a creature coming in and then untapping Emry. And if you can sack it, you can gain mana every time. So it's pretty easy to... like with an altar, go infinite mana. Or you can use one of these next two cards and just win the game with that combo.
Yeah, like the Grinding Station and the Blasting Station. Both, again, featured on Game Nights a long, long time ago.
Yeah, it was your...
it was my combo
Silas
tastic.
Ren?
Yeah.
Kylo Ren? I always want to say Kylo Ren.
If you look at Silas Ren's text, Emry's very similar.
Right.
Right? It's the ability to cast an artifact card from your graveyard.
Emry's just better because you can... Do it multiple times where there's no way to make Silas Ren really do that for you.
Yeah, and Silas has to deal combat damage, so Emry, good job. Grinding Station is a 2-mana artifact. You tap it, sack an artifact. Target player puts the top 3 cards of the library into their graveyard, and whenever an artifact enters the battlefield, you may untap Grinding Station. So, again, lots of ways to just get Emry to untap, constantly replay these zero-cost spells, make other people mill. And Blasting Station is basically a pinger that you sack a creature and it deals 1 damage to any target. And then whenever a creature enters the battlefield, you untap Blasting Station.
So Ornithopter, there's a bunch of zero-cost little teeny creatures that are artifacts.
Yeah, or Emry herself even.
Yeah, so with Intruder Alarm, that will work really well because, again, it's untapping Emry every time, allowing you to recast the thing. Then you use the Blasting Station or the Grinding Station, sack it, goes back to the graveyard, Emry untaps, keeps going over and over and over again. Thornbite Staff also works here because it can stand in for Intruder Alarm. When a creature dies, untap Emry. So Ornithopter dying will untap Emry. There's just a ton of little combos like that in the deck.
Yeah, I think these cards are really powerful. The only thing that worries me that if you decide to build Emry or Sir Conrad is that the gameplay kind of tends to be the same.
Yeah, you're going
to
win.
You just want to set up the thing and then use that thing to win.
Which is... very indicative, usually, of extremely powerful, you know, CEDH level decks, right? They almost always do win in the same way. So these are going to be, you know, you're going to do a Lab Man win or something like that in these in the most powerful versions of these decks.
Yeah.
I think Emry can be built casually and just be fun, like I'm going to get some value out of
fun
my graveyard,
but out,
it can also be built very combo-y. I think, you know, we always say this, is it like top tier competitive? It's hard to tell, but probably not. It would have to, like, Mono Blue is just really good and competitive, and it has to be better than Urza, has to be better than Fairy, has to be better than a lot of these too. So, but it's definitely going to be in the top 10% of decks in EDH for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's very, very easy to cast Emry turn one.
Yeah.
Because of her lines of text.
All right, moving on. Next, we've got our preview card, which we won't go into super detail here, but it's Gadwick the Wizened. If you want a deep dive, we did an entire episode about this last week.
So please check that out. We're only going to briefly cover what we talked about there.
It's blue, 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 and X for a human wizard. It's a 3/3. It says, when Gadwick enters the battlefield, draw X cards. There's a little addendum to that I want to talk about. But his second ability is, whenever you cast a blue spell, tap target non-land permanent and opponent controls. There were some people worried because in the old competitive rules, the X would technically not work, but Eli Schifrin, who is the rules manager at Wizards, and this totally makes sense. We didn't address this. We maybe should have, but didn't occur to me that they would print a card that they knew didn't work. They're changing the rules slightly on how X works in this situation, so you will draw the cards.
Yeah, before X on the battlefield wouldn't affect the CMC, so all of a sudden then you wouldn't have an X
so
cost.
It would technically draw zero, which obviously they wouldn't design a card that did that. So.
I think Eli said he didn't want to make the rules change until the card was previewed because it would give away the card in a way.
Yeah,
which I was
or just wouldn't make sense, I think. Why are you doing that? There's no card that cares. Yeah. Okay, so anyway,
so there's lots of ways to obviously make infinite mana in blue.
Yeah, win with Lab Maniac or the new Jace.
Yeah, and then Josh recommended Will Breaker, which would break some wills because now you're tapping things and just stealing them. But yeah, please do check out our preview episode and you'll find out a lot more about Gadwick the Wizened and how some wise people right here might build him.
All right,
next up we have Grumgully the Generous, one red and a green for a 3/3 legendary creature goblin shaman, Thornbite Staff. Each other non-human creature you control enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. So I think this immediately is like, hey, token decks make a bunch of tokens, and they're all going to be bigger. Red and green, typically good for that kind of effect.
Right, yeah. +1/+1 counter theme, it's pretty well established. There's a lot of cards that sort of work with that, so not super exciting. Some stuff I've seen online, people mentioning that Persist is really good with Grumgully, right?
Oh, because they don't, the +1/+1 counter negates the -1/-1 counter that gets put on it, right?
Right, so if you have like Woodfall Primus, I think, in a sac outlet, then you can just kind of blow up everything.
Oh my gosh.
Or like Glenalendra, I mean, obviously couldn't go in the Grumgully deck, it would have to be in a different shell, but
right.
There are maybe ways to abuse that, since you can just sacrifice the creature forever. Also, just any Persist creature with like Ashna's Altar is infinite mana.
Yeah, maybe Grumgully is really good then with in an Animar deck, if you're going to play that Moldrifter.
There you go.
Because you're going to get Animar +1/+1 counter too when it comes to the battlefield.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
start off the train a little bit, yeah.
So there's some combo potential, but ultimately not super exciting. All right, we're going to continue with our review of all the new legendary creatures, but we're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today. The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
All right, moving on. Let's talk about a very talked about card.
Another potential candidate for most powerful legendary in the set.
That's three, and we are not even... Well, I guess we're like kind of...
About halfway through. This is also the Biobox promo for... So it doesn't actually come in the booster packs.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Jeez. Oh, all right, it's Feldegriff, the Returned King. His name is Kenrith. Sorry, guys. It's 4 and a white for a human noble. That's a 5/5. Good rate. Has 5 abilities on it, and just like Feldegriff, each one of them is assigned to a single color, just like Chromat, actually.
Right, right.
Yeah, here we go.
Here we go.
Maybe it's better. For 1 red mana, for a single red mana, all creatures gain trample and haste until end of turn.
All creatures, so you can even do it for your opponents if you want.
Yeah.
Okay.
For 1 and a green, that's 2 mana now, you get put a +1/+1 counter on target creature.
Sure.
Sure. For a 2 and a white, that's 3 mana, target player gains 5 life. All right. For 3 and a blue, target player draws a card. And for 4 and a black, put target creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under its owner's control. Kenrith does not need to tap for any of these.
That's the big problem with this card, because it's an infinite... If you get infinite mana, which we know is easy to do, because we always talk about it.
Now that you have 5 colors.
Yeah, it's easy to do in just blue. So it's very easy to do now that you add black and every black tutor to it,
yeah,
and all the other colors and their ways to go infinite with mana. If you ever go infinite with mana, you immediately win the game with Kenrith in a number of ways, right?
Yeah.
Gain infinite life. That'll probably win you the game. Target player draws a card. Mill everybody out. That'll probably win the game. Or yeah, you could choose to draw all the cards yourself and then cast all the cards because you have infinite mana. And then you can also give all the stuff you cast haste.
And trample. And you can put +1/+1 counters on all of them. So they're going to get in. They're going to be huge. Kenrith is a card that is just like a big circle of synergy. Every single thing he does just happens to go well with itself. But more importantly...
It's Staff of Domination, the legendary creature, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. But more powerful, because for a single red mana, all creatures gain trample and haste until end of turn. Now, there are a lot of fun politics that people are talking about this. Like, obviously, someone else is attacking. Hey, I can give your creatures trample and haste. Maybe I'll make this bigger or whatever. And I think that's a lot of fun. But I think competitive players are drooling at this card. or more spiky players in general, just because it has so many options. And I think for the most part, you're going to see this used as just a powerful commander as opposed to a Feldegriff group hug commander.
Yeah, I just wish they would stop making these cards that are basically like, if you get infinite mana, you win, because it's so easy to get infinite mana. And like,
yeah, it's
Kenrith, Gadwick all fit that role. Emry, all three of them fit that role. And so Kenrith is even more egregious than the others, because all you don't
every color
you don't need anything else on it. You don't even need a sac outlet. Once you have infinite mana, the abilities on the card give you, it's Thrasios basically, but five color. It costs a little bit more to get out, obviously. I just think, yeah, I think it's too bad, because I like five color generals. I like a lot of different abilities on cards. Maybe you had to make it so that he had to tap to do this stuff or something.
Maybe,
then you need one more piece, right? Some way to untap it to make this really go off. But it is undoubtedly very powerful.
Yeah, and I think the silver lining is that it's exciting for a casual crowd, because I think this is the kind of card that's like, you want to build a five color general, but you don't want to do like the Morophon tribal thing. Well, Kenrith is here for you, and he's a human. Everyone loves humans.
I think all of the abilities are kind of overcosted, though, if you're not abusing it with infinite mana, right? Like, besides maybe four and a black, put a creature from your graveyard onto the battlefield. The
rest, some burial
four rights. Mana for a card, three mana to gain five life, two mana for a 1/1 counter. Okay, one red to give everything trample and haste is also efficient.
Those
middle three are not very efficient. And so
there are a lot of cards that do save three in a blue draw card.
Yeah.
You know, there's a new fairy in the set that does it.
So it almost says you have to create a ton of mana.
Yeah.
Might as well go infinite. And so it's just going to push you in that direction, I think.
Yeah, unless, I mean, again, and if you are wanting to take this more casual, you could just make a five-color deck that has the upside of occasionally being able to use his abilities. But
will anyone believe you?
Yeah.
That's what
you've
done.
It's the same
done.
When you play Emery. Like, it's a fun artifact jank deck. It's
that's
like,
true.
Yeah, also has the ability to kill all of us right now. So, I don't know.
It's a little dicey.
The first couple of games might not be easy, because it would just get knocked out. All right.
Oh, that was a fail.
Made it back.
Okay.
Oh, man, I thought that was going to come back, too.
All right, on to the next. Oh, no.
It's a human noble.
Oh, yeah.
It's Linden, the Steadfast Queen. You didn't flow that one away.
No, I didn't. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. This is our white devotion card. So it's white for a human noble, 3/3 with vigilance. It says, whenever a white creature you control attacks, you gain one life. What did we say earlier about every time they print a mono white legendary, it is an opportunity to help white out as a color?
Even just a little bit.
They have not helped white at all yet.
No.
Yeah, this is just boring.
Yeah, it's the same as the other ones. Like, whenever your creature attacks, everyone gets +1/+1. Woo! It's like, okay.
We have cards that whenever creatures enter the battlefield, you get life. This one's, like, harder to get to trigger than that.
And those cards, like, cost one mana. One white mana, yeah. I think Linden is just here for flavor and to complete the cycle.
Missed opportunity, though. Like, you could be doing something that helps white out as a color.
Yeah, and, like, honestly, if they're trying to balance for standard, then why not just make this, like, 3 white, and then make it something much more powerful?
Yeah, or sure, make
Commander.
I don't know. Give us one, right? There's the Uncommon Knight. There's this one. Make one of them good in Commander.
Yeah, but meanwhile, the black cards in this so far are all
awesome.
Like, if you look at the power, if you put it between 1 and 10...
Yeah, the white ones are twos.
Where does not even two? This is like a two, maybe a one and a half.
Well, one's got to be a 3/3 for two.
Okay, right. It's just a regular, yeah, vanilla creature. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is barely above that.
I mean, a 3/3 vigilance for three mana is like, okay, cool.
Sure, Conrad is better than if you took both the mono white commanders so far and stapled them together.
Yeah. And made it cost less.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Come on, Wizards. Help white out here.
Please.
All right, on to the next one.
This one's really fun. It's called Questing Beast, which is a very strange card that doesn't have the word the in front of it to be a legendary creature.
Yeah, it is weird that it doesn't have a name, right?
Yeah, like the Gitrog monster.
Or it could just be Blargle, the Questing Beast.
Nope, just Questing Beast.
Okay. I'm going to call him Blargle from now on.
Behold, it's Blargle. No, we call him Questing Beast around these parts. It's 2 green for a beast, 4/4. It has Vigilance, Death Touch, and Haste. Okay, that is already pretty sweet. Questing Beast can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less. Can't wait to play this in Limited.
Oh, it's just a beating in Limited.
Combat damage that would be dealt by creatures you control can't be prevented.
Only creatures you control.
Only creatures you control. Very important. Whenever Questing Beast deals combat damage to an opponent, it deals that much damage to target Planeswalker that player controls.
So you can hit them and also hit the Planeswalker. Yeah, that's...
Which is actually, in a lot of decks that need an opponent to lose life, kind of relevant.
Yep.
One card or a type of card that I thought was really funny are anytime you play any fogs, it's a one-sided fog.
Right. You're like, your stuff doesn't deal damage, mine still does.
Yeah, because Fog will say prevent all common damage that would be dealt this turn. However, common damage that will be dealt by creatures you control can't be prevented. So I think it's just, you swing in.
Constant Miss already at a very powerhouse card. Yeah. Becomes ridiculous in this deck because now it's an offensive card.
Yeah, which is very interesting to think about.
Yeah, that's... Fogs are pretty sweet with this guy. I really like it.
I mean, other than that, I'm not terribly excited about this card, to be honest.
No.
Trample maybe gets better, but Trample is already pretty good.
He's got Death Touch, so you only have to sign one damage if you give it Trample, too. I mean, okay.
Yeah. I mean, in a deck like Nykia of the old ways.
Just tons of creatures.
Yeah, a lot of creatures. You're going to want to use cards like this. Thantis the Warweaver was one I found online. It's 3 black, red, and green for a 5/5 with vigilance and reach. All creatures attack each combat if able, and whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker you control, you get to play +1/+1 counter on Thantis. So it's kind of one of those, everyone go after each other, but I got questing beasts to make it harder.
And if you have a lot of fogs, then that works well with Thantis too, I think.
Yeah, totally.
All right, the next one is Rankle, Master of Pranks.
I just think of Christine. When I see this.
Christine Rankle.
It's Sprankle, Master of Prankles.
She is. I would put her up there. I don't know if she's a Master of Pranks. Probably. Sorry, I meant Christine, not Rankle. Rankle is definitely a Master of Pranks. 2 black fairy rogue, 3/3, flying in haste. Whenever Rankle deals combat damage to a player, choose any number of the following. Each player discards a card. Each player loses 1 life and draws a card. Each player sacrifices a creature.
Rankle, again. Single-handedly better than every other white creature that we've talked about.
Yep. And
combined.
So you don't have to choose all three, but you can. So you can make everybody discard it, then everybody draw and lose a life, and then everybody sack a creature. I mean, usually my guess is you're going to be doing the discard and sacrifice ones.
Yeah, and you're going to play like Bitter Blossoms on your side of the battlefield with a lot of fairies to make sure that you're not sacrificing bad things.
Yep.
And you're going to want to
discard good
cards.
And you're going to reanimate stuff out of the graveyard.
Yeah, totally.
There's obviously cards like Waste Knot and Bone Miser, which care about either you or your opponent's discarding cards, and they give you a variety of benefits. So both of those are good when everyone's discarding cards.
Yep. Geth Grimoire, 4 mana artifact, whenever an opponent discards a card, you may draw a card. So you kind of hit parity, which is nice.
No, better than that, right? Because all three are going to discard.
Right. You get to draw 3 cards.
So you can draw 3 cards and discard one.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. What's the next one? Oh, Ronus the Indomitable. Ronus is 2 and a green for a Death Touch Indestructible 5/5. And it can't attack or block unless you control a creature with 4 or greater. But you pay 2 and a green, and another creature gets +2/+0 and trample until end of turn. So giving Rankle trample guarantees you're going to deal combat damage and allows you to, you know, always get the trigger. Because that's the way Rankle can kind of be stopped.
Yeah.
Is, oh, I just block.
Yeah, I think you want to put Rank. I don't think Rankle is a good commander because this also just reads, I hate you on it, which is you're going to make us discard? You're going to make us do this and sack all the time? Like, oh gosh. Or are you playing Grave Pact in there?
Oh, yeah. Dictate of Erebos. Both of those are going to be a little bit brutal. But yeah, I don't know. I think there's enough, like, there's the land that lets you give your thing fear. There's Rogue's Passage. Right. Maybe you give Whisper Silk Cloak, so you're just always going to get in with it. You know, a little bit of Shroud might make it hard to kill. And then all of a sudden, everyone, making your opponents all discard a card and sacrifice a creature every turn.
Yeah, it does have haste too, so it's doing it the turn it comes in.
It's possible that very quickly, within only a couple of turns, they're just out of stuff.
I don't even know if you need to have other enablers like Whisper Silk Cloak, because having a flyer in the air, we've seen so many times. The fact that affects each player, so you only need to hit one person. It's not like that person is going to be the one that discards only.
That's true. There's almost always one player you're going to be able to swing into if you have a flyer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I think it's definitely better than all the mono white ones. It's definitely not as powerful as Sir Conrad or one of those.
No.
But interesting. I think you could build a deck around it. You're right, though. As soon as I see Rankle, I'm like, oh, I'm killing that thing every time. I don't want discard cards.
Or I'm going to make sure I have a blocker. But even then, you have to make sure everyone else has a blocker, so it's easier just to get rid of it.
You just hold your removal and then try and kill it.
Yep. All right, next up, Tobron, Thane of Redfell. It's the red cycle for the noble cycle. It's 1 red, red, red for a dwarf noble. It's a 2/4. If a red source you control would deal damage to an opponent or a permanent an opponent controls, it deals that much damage +2 instead. This is just right at my heart right here.
It's funny because while you were in New Zealand, DJ and I did an episode. We called it the Commander Wish List, and it was all the things we thought were missing from the format that we wish existed. And I was like, I want a werewolf commander and blah, blah, blah. And we both said, like, red needs something to sort of even it out for multiplayer, because all the cards have specific numbers on them that are balanced for 1v1 and 20 life. And this is a card that can kind of even the playing field for red for multiplayer and 40 life.
Yeah, and a card like Heartless Hidetsugu is one that works very well with this because it's a creature that you tap and it deals damage to each player equal to half that player's life total rounded down. And normally it's like, oh, we all lose the same amount of life. If we die, we kind of die together. But now with Tobran out, it's going to deal that much damage to them, but plus two.
Plus two to your opponents, right?
Yeah, so not to you. So they're actually going to lose half their life and then lose another two on top of it, which means that if you're racing them with Heartless Hidetsugu, you're going to win because they're just going to be sinking slower, lower and lower than you do each time.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Harsh Mentor is another good one you put down, which is a two-drop creature. It's meant for like aggro decks and like modern, right?
Yeah.
But it's a one in red for a 2/2 human cleric. Whenever an opponent activates an ability of an artifact, creature, or land on the battlefield, if it isn't a mana ability, Harsh Mentor deals 2 damage to that player. It would now deal 4 damage.
Yeah, every time you tap a Sol Ring.
Well, no, it's not a mana ability.
It's not a mana ability. Okay, yeah. Sorry. Whatever.
But anytime you tap a creature, land, or artifact for anything but mana,
you
take 4.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah. That's a lot of damage.
It's a lot. Yeah, exactly. It's a tenth of your life. That's 10% of your life every single time. Obviously, very good with Purphoros, God of the Forge.
Oh, man. So
now every creature's doing 4 damage when it comes in.
You only have to get 10 creatures out and it's over.
Yeah. Pyrohemia as well. It's sort of you pay 1 red, deals 1 damage to every single thing, and now it's doing 3 damage.
1 red mana, 3 damage to all your opponents.
Yeah.
Like, very easy to play Pyrohemia and just win the game.
Impact Tremors. Each creature does 3 damage every time it enters the battlefield. It's just a lot of ways to deal a lot of
damage. Impact Tremors is really good because it's now better than Purphoros, but it only costs like 2 mana to get Impact Tremors out, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Tobran just opens a lot of those possibilities up.
Here's a new card that I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
It's Aria of the Flame. It's 2 in a red for enchantment. When Aria of the Flame enters the battlefield, each opponent gains 10 life. We didn't like this card in the set review. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a verse counter on Aria of the Flame. Then it deals damage equal to the number of verse counters on it to target player or planeswalker.
Right.
So before it was just take too long for you to get back to that life you gave back. But now with 1 verse counter, it does 3 damage. With 2, it does 4.
Especially if you're playing a deck that's built around this effect. My Neheb the Eternal deck wants to have this kind of effect often. And now Tobran just gives every single card just a slight bump in power level. And just having a creature do that, it's nice because I'm already playing the Dictate of the Twin Gods in the deck.
Yes.
I'm already doing things that want to bust up the damage.
Yeah, it's +4.
Yeah, well, the nice thing about Tobran is that it doesn't affect yourself.
Yeah.
So it actually makes all of those Dictate cards slightly better because oftentimes in these types of decks, you're racing to the finish to not die first.
Right.
You have to
be a little ahead of everybody.
Yeah, being a little ahead, Tobran makes that sort of possible.
It makes a lot of cards really efficient. So something simple like Blazing Volley, which is 1 red mana for a sorcery, and it deals 1 damage to each creature your opponents control.
It's 3 mana for 1.
It's lightning bolts all their creatures now. Like, I think that's what's really powerful about Tobran is the fact that it now makes red cards super efficient.
Yeah. Firebrand Archer is kind of similar. It's a 1 in a red for a 2/1, and whenever you cast a non-creature spell, the Firebrand Archer deals 1 damage to each opponent.
So it becomes better than Gutter Snipe now for this 2-drop.
That's actually really crazy.
Gutter Snipe also would be very, very good, by the way. Deals 4 to all of your opponents. Yeah.
It all works out. It all worked out in the end.
All right. We got one more before we get to the Brawl Commanders here.
Yep. It is...
It's the green devotion one, right?
Yeah, it's Yorvol. What was the name you came up with the other guy? Blargle?
Blargle. This is Yorvo.
Yorvo, Lord of Garenbrig. Green, green, green for a giant noble. It's a 0/0, and it enters the battlefield with 4 +1/+1 counters on it. Whenever another green creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on Yorvo. Then if that creature's power is greater than Yorvo's power, put another +1/+1 counter on Yorvo.
So Yorvo gets really big, really fast. Again, +1/+1 counters theme is just very well established.
Yeah, and this is, you know, it's whatever. It's a big creature. In decks that want to have big creatures and want to, you know, satisfy certain conditions by having a lot of power on the battlefield, Yorvo can be one of those things that can slowly get out of hand. But the problem is that, like, you got to play a 6-drop to give 2 counters to Yorvo, or a 6/6 or something, you know?
A 5. Oh, yeah, you're right. It has to be 6 power.
I mean, if it's a 5/5, then Yorvo just climbs up 1, but I think you want to try and...
You obviously have hardened scales and all that stuff in there, too.
Yeah.
It's kind of boring, but again, green is fine, so it's okay for green to get some boring legendaries once in a while. It's not the same as white, which is not fine.
Yeah, because it's the lens that we look at it through. Whenever white gets a legendary, we ask, can it be a commander?
Can it please be good? Because right now, there's no white deck I really want to build, maybe Avacyn, and then no.
You just let down.
Green is like, I got tons of options. So there's Sylvalas and everything in the world, so who cares?
Yeah, so we don't mind so much.
Okay, now we're going to move on to the Brawl Commanders. We are doing mini-sodes for each of the Brawl pre-cons, and we're going over. We've had a couple of them come out. There's probably a couple more still to come. I'm not sure of the timing because we're kind of recording this stuff all ahead of time. But we're going to do like short 15 to 20 minute episodes on how to take the Brawl pre-con and for relatively cheap, upgrade it to a full-on commander deck. We give a full list of what 40 cards we would add in there so you can get it up to speed. So we're
Definitely check out those episodes, and we're going to talk a lot more about them as well. But we're just going to sort of briefly go over what we talked about here.
Yeah, so here also we'll take the opportunity maybe to talk about some of the more expensive cards that we couldn't put in those mini episodes because we're kind of holding ourselves to a budget. So the first one of these Brawl Commanders is Alayla, Artful Provocateur. She is one and Esper. I'm doing this from memory. For a flying Death Touch Lifelink 2/3.
Mm-hmm.
She says, other flying creatures you control get +1/+0.
Yep.
And whenever you cast an artifact or enchantment, you get a 1/1 blue flying fairy creature token.
Yeah, dang, good job.
Did we do it?
I think so.
There's a lot of text on that card. So she creates fairies when you cast artifacts or enchantments, and then she pumps your fairies. There's a whole bunch of ways to go. I think the most powerful version of this deck is almost certainly like some sort of KCI, Clark Clan Ironworks.
Yeah, KCI combo-y is so good.
Deck, right? Which that's an artifact that's Ashnod's Altar for artifacts.
Yeah.
You sacrifice an artifact and you make 2 mana. And what you're doing is you're using the classic like Scrap Trawler, Mirror Retriever. These are cards that allow you to recycle artifacts from your graveyard to your hand in Battlefield. And you just, in Modern, it was a deck for a long time before they banned a bunch of pieces out of it, but it allows you to just kind of like get into these
loops of things.
Yeah, artifacts just coming in, entering, and the whole time you're doing that with Alayla, you're getting fairies and stuff, and you can use those fairies in interesting ways to maybe sack for more mana. Grand Architect's a really good one. You want to read it?
Yeah, this is a card that I've always wanted to put in decks. It just seems like it has so much power. It's 1 blue for a 1/3 Vedalken Artificer. Other blue creatures you control get +1/+1, and you can pay blue to target artifact creature becomes blue until end of turn. Interesting. And you can tap an untapped blue creature you control, add colorless, spend this mana only to cast artifact spells or activate abilities of artifacts. So you turn the artifacts creatures into blue creatures, and then you can tap those blue creatures if you don't already have them, and boom, you just add 2 colorless mana to cast
And your fairies are blue.
Yeah.
So every time you cast an artifact, you make a fairy. And the thing about Grand Architect is it doesn't give the creature the ability. It says tap an untapped blue creature you control, which means there's no summoning sickness for that.
Yeah, you can just tap 50 creatures, give yourself 100 mana.
And as soon as you cast an artifact, you can tap that creature again that turn immediately. So this is a way to turn all those Alayla shenanigans. The fairies you're getting, you don't need haste to like attack with them. They just create more mana that allows you to... You're going to just combo off, basically, is what's going to happen.
Yeah, Alayla gives you the possibility of like, oh, I have a bunch of small creatures and they're all +1/+0 and they're going to hit you in the air. Like, that is, I think, an alternate win con. I think the way that you really make this deck come is like what you said. Just artifact combo shenanigans.
Yeah, I think that's almost certainly the best version of the deck. Although a lot of people are looking to build enchantment versions, which does work. And a lot of the ways that you would pump the fairies are with enchantments like Cathar's Crusade and what do we call those? Anthem effects.
Yeah.
So I think that is a way to go, lean into the token fairy side. I just think it's probably less powerful than the artifact KCI
stuff. Yeah, you're
KCI
an Esper
stuff.
Too, right?
Yeah.
You don't have green or white in
the
colors.
Well, you have white.
Right. Sorry. You don't have green.
Yeah.
Which I think is really how when you get rewarded for those sort of
Yeah, because you don't get double in season parallel lives, and you also don't get the Crater Hoof Behemoth stuff.
Yep. Next up, we got Chulainn, Teller of Tales. A lot of talk about this card. All right, this is also from memory. It's 2 in Bant for a 2/4 with Vigilance. Whenever you cast a creature spell, you draw a card and you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. And you can pay 3 mana to tap Chulainn to return target creature you control to its owner's hand.
Wow.
Oof.
And Chulainn, something we should mention is it doesn't say another target creature you control to its owner's hand, so Chulainn can protect himself.
Himself, yeah.
Which is really annoying when you're playing against it.
It's unfortunately just a 5 mana card, but, you know, Rune is expensive as well, and it's incredibly powerful. So is Chulainn. We talk about this on the episode quite a lot, but I think a card like Intruder Alarm is going to be very good in this deck because you're going to be untapping a lot of creatures that tap for mana, which is the kind of creature you want to play in this deck because they're cheap and they're going to ramp you, but they're also going to be able to give you a lot of triggers off of Chulainn.
Yep.
Cloudstone Curio is a card we talked about, a way to bounce cards back to your hand over and over again. You got like your White Mane Lions as well. Alurin is a bit more of an expensive card, but this card is just nuts in this deck. It's 2 green for an enchantment. Any player may cast creature spells with CMC 3 or less without paying their mana cost, and as though they had flash.
It's so good in this deck.
I think a lot of decks would be like, sweet, I can totally abuse this, but the Chulainn deck is like, this is my entire deck.
And also, if you just have a White Mane Lion or something, it now becomes bounce itself bounce forever, up. Draw your entire deck, put all your lands into play.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
And then the way to like really win is cards with Overburden and Mana Breach, both of which punish players for playing spells or creatures by returning lands in control to their owner's hand. However, because you're getting parity on the lands that you play with Chulainn, you're always going to be fine, yeah.
Yeah. You also have Elf Ball put down here.
Yeah.
So you can, because elves are very cheap creatures that also create a lot of mana really quickly, so you can snowball out of control with Chulainn, drawing all the cards to replace that stuff, and then win with like Azuri Renegade Leader,
yep.
which allows you to pump all your elves. Even Craterhoof and stuff will work in that.
Yeah, and then Turek of Warcaller is the same thing, just puts a bunch of plus and plus counters. Find a way to give them all trample, and boom, your elves become mighty fighting machines.
All right, let's talk about the next one. Is Korvald, Fey Cursed King.
All right.
It's two and Jund for a 4/4 flying dragon.
Yep.
It says when it enters the battlefield or attacks, you sacrifice a permanent.
Mm-hmm. And then whenever you sacrifice a permanent, play plus one counter on Korvald and draw a card. Hey, we're doing great.
Yeah. Hopefully we're not wrong.
Yeah.
I feel like we're right.
I feel like we're right, and that's what matters.
Yeah, this is actually a very powerful card, and if I had to pick one of the Brawl decks, when you're playing against all of the Brawl decks together,
yeah.
that was the most powerful consistently.
Inherently, yeah, this
I
one.
Would say Korvald, which is surprising because you would think Chulainn, but the problem is the entire table knows Chulainn is very strong and Chulainn gets removed, whereas Korvald is strong, does get removed, but that deck just tends to work better on its own without Korvald out. And
it
then
also
if you,
it has the ability to go off the turn you play it.
Yeah, and it just chugs along. So if Korvald dies, you're still doing stuff, whereas a lot of the other decks, if you don't have a Layla out, you're not doing much. If you mm-hmm. don't have Chulainn out, you're not doing much. If you don't have Sir Gwyn out, you're not doing much. Korvald's like, nope, I'm still sacking creatures and getting a ton of value even if he's not out. And if he is out, you're turbocharged, drawing a million cards.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about some of the stuff in here. This is aristocracy style, sacrifice your own stuff type of deck.
Yep. I love Sylvan Safekeeper in this deck. It protects him as well as gives you a way to sacrifice things. It's green for a 1/1. You can sack a land and target creature you control gains Shroud until end of turn. So you're probably targeting Korvald when it comes to that.
I really like Brass's Bounty, which is 6 and a red for a sorcery, and you create a treasure token for each land you control. And treasures are so good with Korvald because you sack them for mana and then draw a card because you sack something, make it bigger. So you can get like, I get 9 treasures. A lot of times that's not that great because you already had 9 land. But in this case, that's 9 cards and 9 +1/+1 counters on Korvald.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Dictate of Erebos and Grave Pact obviously are very good here because you're going to want to be sacrificing things, and so will your opponents. We'll force your opponent's hands. Birthing Pod, obviously, Jund. You hear the word Jund, you think modern, you think just value-based strategies.
Birthing Pod's so good.
Yeah, allows you to tap in, sack a creature, define a creature with CMC 1 more than the creature you sacrifice, so you're moving up the chain for the pod. Same thing goes for Natural Order. It's an additional cost to cast a spell, sacrifice a creature.
Turns out
the word sacrifice is on every single card in Magic, just every single one.
So it's sack a green creature. When we were talking about this in the mini-sode, I think I said you could only get a green creature, but you...
No, I think you did say you have to sacrifice a green creature.
You got to sacrifice a green creature and get a green creature, so yeah. Natural Order is so powerful because it just finds Craterhoof when you need it or Seedborn or whatever.
I know, for 4 mana.
Yeah, pretty crazy. Jeez. Obviously, you want the Altars, Ashnod's and Phyrexian to sack stuff. Blood Artist is another card mm-hmm. that's very, very good in decks like these. Just drain everybody out.
There's a lot of ways to build this deck, which I think is kind of exciting. Because you can go like I want lands that sacrifice themselves. Because
fetch lands also draw you a card and put a counter on Korvald. So you want all the fetches you can get in there. That leads you towards like Gitrog, Scapeshift. There's some combo-y stuff people are talking about where you get Food Chain plus Squee.
Oh, you just keep...
You keep replaying Squee, and then at the end, once you have infinite mana, you keep sacking Squee.
Oh, to replay.
To draw your entire deck.
Oh, gosh.
Because Squee's the only one that you can play from exile, your graveyard. So you can do that Food Chain thing first, and then sack it to go to your graveyard and recast it with mana that you created. So that's kind of crazy, yeah.
Korvald is pretty crazy.
All right, we're on to the last of the Brawl Commanders. It's Sir Gwyn, Hero of Ashvale. Here we go. 3 in Mardu. For a 5/5 mm-hmm. with Vigilance and Menace. Does she have Vigilance?
It does have Menace.
I think she has Vigilance. We should probably look that up. I'll read the rest while you look that up really quick. She says, oh boy, this is the one I play on game nights, and how can I not remember it?
That's the only reason I remember it.
Equip cost of equipment is 0. Is it only 0 when you go on a Knights you control?
It does have Vigilance and Menace.
Okay.
It is a 3 Mardu 5/5. Whenever an equipped creature you control attacks,
you draw, lose a life and draw a card.
Yep. And equipment you control have the text equip knight 0.
Right. So it's 0 to equip only to other knights.
Yeah.
And then it does trigger individually. So if you have 3 creatures with equipment and you attack, you'll draw 3 and lose 3.
Yeah.
So it's an equipment knight sub-theme thing going on here. I mean, this
puts you in a box. That's
right.
For sure.
It's very paint by numbers, right?
Yeah, yeah. But this set obviously is going to have a lot of knight support. This does feel a little, unfortunately, like, you know, I'm not going crazy.
But some
people
get very excited about tribal, and knight tribal has kind of been a thing that's been coming along. So if you want a knight tribal commander, this is probably it.
It also has card draw stacked onto it as a Mardu commander, so I think that's important as well.
I wish it was cheaper. So I wish he was like a 4-mana 3/3 with all the same abilities or something like that. You can even take off the menace to make it more balanced, because it feels like getting that going so late is less helpful. And also the fact that if they just kill it once, it costs 8 now.
Ugh.
It's too easy to turn off your deck when the commander costs so much. So that would be my one complaint about Sir Gwyn. But let's talk about some cards that might go in the deck.
Yeah, the first one is Knight Exemplar. It might be the best Knight Lord, I think. It's a 2/2 with first strike for 1 white, and it has the text, other Knight creatures you control get +1/+1 and have indestructible.
Seems good.
Just kind of the card you want to have in this deck. I think the problem with these decks, too, is when we talk about them, none of the cards we talk about are, like, super exciting.
Right.
Or not. Like, here's the combo. It's like, this is a card that synergizes well because it says Knight on it a bunch.
The next card is pretty strong. Unfortunately, going to be a lot more expensive these days. It just got unbanned in Modern, but it is a must include in the deck, you know, if you're building the most powerful version you can, which is Stoneforge Mystic. It's 1 white for a 1/2 core artificer. When Stoneforge enters the battlefield, you may search your library for an equipment card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. But you can also pay 1 white and tap the Stoneforge Mystic, and you may put an equipment card from your hand onto the battlefield, so you can bypass the cost of that equipment, and then you can equip for free with Sir Gwyn. So this is probably the best card in the deck.
You don't need to put out the equipment that you find.
Right.
It could be anything else, like Argentum Armor. Oh my gosh, that card just becomes nuts. And we talk a lot about the different kinds of equipment you can do on the Sir Gwyn episode for the Brawl to EDH deck upgrade. There's Balan, Wandering Knight, 2 white for a 3/3 Cat Knight. Has first strike, and Balan has double strike as long as 2 or more equipment are attached to it. Pretty simple to do in this deck. And for 1 white, you can attach all equipment you control to Balan. So even if Sir Gwyn isn't out, at least you can get your very expensive casting cost stuff and equip cost onto Balan for a cheap price.
Balan should have been called Balan Magnetic Knight.
Ah, just
right?
That would hurt if the equipment came at the wrong angle.
That's actually a good point. Well, you know, he's got armor on.
Yeah. Weathering Knight.
The last card, and I think also a must include in the deck, is Sigarda's Aid. So it's 1 white mana for an enchantment. You may cast aura and equipment spells as though they had flash. And then whenever an equipment enters the battlefield under your control, you may attach it to target creature you control. So your equipment become combat tricks.
Yeah, that's actually really, really crazy.
Makes it impossible to block you. Obviously, with Sir Gwyn out, you want to attach this stuff before the attack so you get the triggers, but still, the threat of being able to do that will make people hesitant to block you.
And to attack you, too.
Yeah.
Because, boom, you suddenly equip a gigantic, scary, massive thing onto someone.
All right, okay. So, that's it. We've gone through all the new legends in the set, and now we're going to go to our two favorite questions that we like to ask at the end of this. It is, what do we think is the most powerful new legend? And then we'll talk about what's our favorite personal legend, which is often not the most powerful one.
Yeah.
This is really tough.
Well, I think we can start off by saying what we think the most powerful of the Brawl commanders is. For me, I just think it's Korvold.
Yeah, I think Julaine's the most powerful of me, but I think that it's so obviously powerful that it actually hurts it.
Yeah.
I think in a vacuum, though, if you just goldfish decks, Chulain's probably more powerful. But the fact that it's a lightning rod for removal actually makes it slightly less powerful. And it's not Urza powerful to the point where it's so powerful to overcome the fact that the entire table will hate it out. so we're going to take the Brawl Commanders out of this discussion. Although I don't think any of the Brawl Commanders would say are the most powerful new legend in the set.
I don't think so, too. But they are pretty up there
in
terms of also, I think, most, because they have access to the most colors.
Yeah,
a lot
of the
other cards in the set are monocolored and stuff, too. So
that's
a really good point. As a commander, too.
This is tough. I don't know what will end up being the most powerful new legend in the set. But, let's just pick, and then we'll do the 3-2-1 thing.
3-2-1
Emry.
Kemrith.
Okay.
Yeah.
Those are the two. I'd say Sir Conrad is...
Sir Conrad could be up there. Yeah. Maybe we didn't break it enough for us to realize that it could be more broken. Who knows?
I think all three of those can be like at least tier 2 type decks, like among the more powerful decks in the format. Maybe not, you know, up there with the Flash Hold decks and stuff like that.
Kenrith,
who knows? I'm not a competitive player, so it could be
5 colors. But Emery's just the combo potential. It's crazy.
Yeah, and it can happen very early because it has a cost reduction mechanic. So if you get like you know, it's easy to get out on turn two if you just get any one mana, you know, artifact of any kind. So any of the Moxen or the Soul Ring and whatnot. So never mind like Mana Crypt and stuff where you just play it turn one. And it's possible to go off turn two with Lion's Eye Diamonds and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Or Lotus Petal. It's possible to really go off.
It's possible to go off turn one and two. Yeah. I think turn one if you have
It is very possible to go off turn two, right? Because if you play one of the... You don't even need Mana Crypt. If you just go Mox Diamond or something.
Yeah.
That's an artifact. So now she costs two. You cast her on turn one.
Mm-hmm.
Then on turn two, you play your land. If you Lotus Petal right there, you're infinite mana right there. And you have enough mana to cast Ashnod's Altar or something like that.
You need then to have you the recast Emery
enough times to then cast Lab Maniac and win, right?
I think so.
I mean, you have to have certain cards and whatnot. But I mean,
that's how every combo works. But yeah, Emery just has, you're right, Emery does have pop-off potential much faster than the rest of the cards. Maybe just generically, like, more flexible commanders would be someone like Kenrith. But Emery obviously has the strategy sort of written on the text.
Emery's also in blue, which allows you to protect what you're doing better than, you know, if it was in red or something. All Kenrith has blue too, so.
Kenrith has everything, Josh.
Yeah. Kenrith is sweet. I would be way more excited if it wasn't just so obviously like, hey, make infinite mana and win that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Favorite overall legend. So this is the one maybe we're the most excited to build around in the set. Let me look here.
I already have one and it's not going to be what you say almost. I would do something incredulous if you chose the same person
well,
as me.
I just want to try and figure out what it is and pick it so that you can do something incredulous. All right, let's go. 3, 2, 1, Iara.
Thane of the Red Fell.
Yeah, okay. Actually,
Mr. Red.
I do think Tobrin is pretty cool.
It is cool.
It is an effect that, like, Red needs.
Yeah, I like the effect a lot. It works a lot with a lot of the strategies that Red uses. And it's just, again, it's like a small edge, but doesn't break the color in any way to help it out. And you said Iara?
Yeah, I think so. I don't have a mono black deck, so maybe Sir Conrad or Iara I would build.
I was going to say I don't have a mono black deck either, but maybe I'll just do Crick.
That's a good one, I heard. Yeah,
indeed.
Or Yawgmoth.
Yawgmoth, yeah.
Let's pause really quick here. So we're going to wrap up, but Wizards, if you're listening out there,
someone is.
Yeah.
We're not talking generic wizards like Gadwick the Wise.
I'm talking Wizards of the Coast people. You got to throw Mono White some bones here. It's getting ridiculous. Look what we just named. Yawgmoth, Crick, Iara, Sir Conrad. There is not a single Mono White commander that's come out in probably the last 5 years.
Yeah.
That is even close to one of those cards, and they all came out in the last two sets.
Yeah. And Kenrith, the worst ability on Kenrith by far is his white ability.
Yeah. But he's a five-color commander. That doesn't even count. Like, it's getting crazy. Like, why show so much favoritism towards the colors? Blue got Emery. Blue got Urza. Blue got Gadwick. There is not a mono-white commander in
close.
Yeah, in the last 5 years. I'm serious. Like, that is insane. Stop giving so much favoritism to the colors that are already the most powerful colors in Commander. There's no reason to do that. White needs a ton of help. Red still needs a little bit of help. Green, blue, and black are fine.
Yeah, they're in fact better than fine. They're doing great.
Yeah,
you can take any of those monocolored decks and make some really powerful stuff out of it. Even red, you can make a really good monocolored deck, but white is just not there.
Not even close. It's lagging so far behind now, and it's getting farther behind by the set because they're not trying to help it catch up.
Yeah, and I really don't like the idea that it's like, well, just put more mana rocks in there. Put more generically powerful cards that can go in every deck, because that also does not help players that are trying to build those decks, because those cards become prohibitively expensive as well.
Yeah. All right. Rant over. Now it's time for To the Listeners. What's your favorite new legend from Throne of Eldraine? Are there any cool interactions that we missed? What do you think is going to be the tip-top most powerful when built to its full optimization?
And please don't just post the mono-white commander as a joke answer.
If you want to pick up any of these cards or any of the cards that go in these decks that we talked about, please go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. When you use our affiliate link, you really are helping out this show, game nights, all of our content. It does keep the lights around here, and we can't thank you enough.
Yep, it makes a huge, huge difference. As does our sponsorship with Ultra Pro. So you can go ahead and buy some Ultra Pro products the next time you are out there in your local gaming store, at your big box retailer, or at cardkingdom.com/commandzone. Just make your battlefield look cool.
Yeah, and look out for that luggage that I saw. We'll put it on screen. I don't know if it's out yet. I probably should have read the entire email before I talked about it on the show, but I just saw the picture and I was like, that is a brilliant idea. I actually need that. So keep an eye out for it. All right, now it's time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic.
Josh is looking at me.
No, I think I have something we can talk about because we touched on it. I don't know. a couple episodes ago, maybe. Yeah. So there's a book series that I love, and they're turning it into potentially a series, I think, on Prime. It's The Wheel of Time.
Right.
Brandon Sanderson finished the series. It was originally started by Robert Jordan, who wrote like the first 9 books, and Brandon wrote like the last 3.
He passed away, right?
Yeah, Robert Jordan unfortunately passed away without finishing the series, and then Brandon Sanderson came in and helped finish it up.
Valiant.
And did a great job, by the way. It was when I was a kid in high school. I started in high school, right? And I read it over the course of like 18 years before it was finally done. And it's, if you stack the books, they'd be like 3 or 4, because they're like 700 pages each. It's crazy epic. So Wheel of Time is a series that's happening, and I'm scared.
That's the end step? You're scared?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think in Hollywood, we often do have these very realistic and very legitimate fears. Because we've seen a lot of our... In fact, this is the point where I've just become numb to a lot of things where someone's like, oh, this is coming out. Good, exciting. I'm like, if it sucks, I don't care because it just does.
It's like, please don't ruin my childhood.
That's the nature of things.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I'm torn. It's like, I'm a little happy they're doing it because there's a chance it could be good. But
yeah.
just percentage chance. It's just like if you walked up to the roulette table, right? Like you put money down. You're not favored to win that bet. And that's just the way this goes. I don't care who you've got involved or whatever. The chance of it being the chance of it being great. I mean, if you have great people involved, your chances of it being good are increased, but they're not 100%.
Yeah, you could put 10 of the best actors in the world in the same room, but if the writing's off, or the directing's off, or the set design's off, or the costuming's off, or the CG is off,
or even just the wrong character for that actor, they could be a great actor, but we've seen great actors be only so-so in things before.
True. I usually use this to tell people when they're very like, if a new trailer comes out, or like for instance, like Robert Pattinson got announced as Batman, and everyone freaked out. I'm like, there's nothing you can do. Right. Any amount of bickering you do online is just like, it's cool. If you want to have that conversation and talk about it more, sure. But you can't really make a judgment until you see the thing on screen and you can actually see it for yourself. So it's very hard because you're right. I am very nervous all the time about a lot of things that I really like and I don't want them to get ruined because Harry Potter was one of those things for me.
Yeah.
When I saw the movies, I was like, this is garbage compared to what I read.
Compared to the books. Yeah. Game of Thrones lived up for a long time, but petered out near the end. I just wanted to say Wheel of Time, if you're a Wheel of Time fan, they are working on that TV show. They've announced a lot of the casting decisions. You can find that online or on Twitter.
You are making the Wheel of Time and you watch this show, we want you to know that we're nervous.
Please be good. Also, if you need a trailer cut, I might...
Josh can make some time.
For that, maybe I would make some time. I've said no to Star Wars and Justice Leagues, but I might say yes to Wheel... Well, I mean, that was a...
That's pretty cool.
I mean, all growing up, like, I wanted to be a movie director, and I wanted to make Wheel of Time when I was in high school.
Dude, this means even more to you then.
It was one of those things that, I wanted to make that. So, fingers crossed. We'll see.
Fingers crossed. All right.
It could be great. You never know.
One thing that is great is our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern, hosted by Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman.
You're not used to doing this.
I know. I was about to say Alex Bateman and Ben Kessler there. That wouldn't be good. They talk about all things modern. Obviously, a lot of new cards are going to be infiltrating modern now. I mean, I expect to see Emery in modern. I can't imagine.
Urza's doing a ton of work in modern, so, these legendary creatures are legit.
If you want to find out, and as well, if you're like an EDH financier, you want to find out which cards may be the ones to pick up early from cardkingdom.com/commandzone, you're going to want to check out the Masters of Modern. You can find them online, on YouTube. They're making videos by looking up the Masters of Modern, or you can find them on Twitter at the MMCast.
Our editors are Ashlyn Rose and Craig Blanchett. Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the Living Cards animations to begin and end all of our shows. You can find him on Twitter at Living Cards MTG.
Never make me do the Masters of Modern show out again.
All right, everybody.
I think that's my own choice, but yeah.
You start going into it, I was like, all right, let's do it.
All right, this is better than Wheel of Time.
Thanks for watching.
See you later.
Peace.
For your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find
people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angi.com.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.